reach that highest level.
And it's only a mental evolution, correct? It's not a physical evolution.
Yeah, it's a mental evolution, yeah. More than the physical, yeah.
So the body doesn't go through any transformations at all. It's just the mind that is developed to that point, to reach the highest evolutionary point. Correct?
Well, the body is simply like the vehicle that carries the mind. But still, the body also evolves to a certain extent. Now, this is why even the Buddha's body was different. They speak of the 32 special characteristics about that body of the Buddha. You have heard about that. Yeah. So ultimately the body also begins to change. I think mainly the brain. There are differences in the brain. So, but all that depends on your effort that you make now. The effort you make now will help you to be born in a better situation in the next life. And then that is how the gradual growth takes place. So, the growth begins with the effort that you make now. That's the important thing.
Was the concept of God was the concept of God the same 2,500 years ago as we have now in this in the Western world?
Well, the concept of God in the Western world is mainly based on that Bible. And we have the three religions, Judaism, Christianity and Islam. They are all based on that. And that they, but before the one God came the many God one, the polytheism. And if we look at the evolution of religion on earth, we begin to see how this gradually evolution took place. You see, again, in the evolution of religion, there are four steps. One is what I call devotion. That is in the Buddhist Pali language. It's called saddha. Devotion level. Now, devotion level is mainly the devotion to God, you see. And devotion to God means, again, we have to understand, when we speak of God, we think of three things. One is the power, almighty, and then we also have all-knowing, and all good. Even before religion started, they had what is called magic. Magic means completely the worship of power. Worshipping power means always thinking of God as the powerful person. Who is wielding power? That's how he becomes the creator of the world. Because the most powerful person that we can think of should be the person who created the world. So, the idea of power is there. And the idea of power is simply magic. That means people, when they, even the child that is born, is weak. And also the primitive people, they didn't understand how things are happening in the world. And they were weak in their knowledge, ignorance. and also powerless, because they had no power to do things. Even to get food, they have to go and either hunt animals or maybe grow food or whatever. They had to do all kinds of things. And then there is lightning, thunder, rain, earthquakes, and all kinds of things happening. And they begin to feel powerless here. And that powerlessness is ultimately what creates the idea of a powerful person who is being controlling the world, you see. And so they think of these different gods. They think of God, the lightning is done by one god, and rain is done by another god, thunder comes from another one, and earthquakes come from another person. So like that, they thought of many gods like that. They thought everything that happened in the world was controlled by spirits of all kinds. Maybe some are bad, some are good. So the bad spirits were called devils and the good spirits were called gods. And so they began to think like that, and that is mainly magic. And they pray and do all kinds of rituals, dances, ceremonies and all that. These are magical ceremonies. But one fine day, people, as they begin to evolve, you see, they began to realize that with all this magic, it didn't work properly. And so one wise man says, well, your magic is not working because you have to be good people first. If you are good only, gods will help you. If you are bad, they won't help you. So you have to be good. Then what happens is these people think, oh, we have to be good, not enough to pray and make sacrifices. We also have to be good. And so some people might think, there is one man who is a good person. I will go and ask that man to pray for us. And then at least when that man prays, God will help us. So this is how the priests started coming up. The priestcraft came, and they began to give gifts to the priests, and then they get them to pray for them, you see. So that is how gradually religion began, you see. Religion came when goodness came into being, when people began to think in terms of being good. So goodness is the main thing about religion. Just worshipping powers became magic. So as religion grew up, then this god also became a good god. And as a good god, he also punishes bad people and rewards good people. So the punishment and reward came into being. God became a judge, you see. And so that's how gradually the idea of God evolves, you see. And then gradually a time came when human beings thought, well, we have been leading a good life, still troubles are coming to me. How is that? So then the priests, of course, now begin bringing new ideas, and they begin to say, well, it is not enough to just be good. You will be rewarded in heaven after death for being good. But if you want all happiness here and now, then you will have to give up all these worldly pleasures and unite with God. You have to unite. That means you have to purify your mind. And so came what is called mysticism. So religious mysticism comes from there, where they give up the worldly life of going after pleasures. They want to control their mind and purify their mind and then unite with God here and now. So that is how even things like yoga and meditation and things like that came, you see. Something going beyond just leading a good life. And that is the other stage in religion. Now, it was from here that people went further than that. When they started purifying the mind, their mind became tranquil, they could think more clearly, and then as a result what happened was, they began to understand the problem of life. The problem of life is that we all are aware that we are existing, but we are also aware that we are all going to die. And that is the biggest problem. And that people are worried. Our whole life, really, although we are not fully aware of that, our whole life is an effort to prevent death. That's why we go after food, this is why we go after clothing, shelter, medicine, why we go after doing jobs. All that is just to prevent death. We want to keep on living. And we want to live happily also. So that whole problem, ultimately the most basic problem, is the problem of death. And now here, when the mind is fully calmed, people began to realize, are we really living? You see, life is being born, growing old, and dying. It's not a static thing. It's a dynamic process of change. The child that is born is not the same person, old person who dies is not the same. It's all different. The whole body has changed, and the mind has changed. If change is what is going on, is it really existing? You see, if you think of a wave, wave just rises and falls. Is the wave something that really exists? You see, in a similar way, life is a change. If everything is changing, there is no real existence here. That's the point. And if we are not really existing, how can we die? You see, if we begin to really understand this properly, even death is an illusion. When we begin to understand life is an illusion, and therefore death is an illusion, and if we can get out of this illusion, then we are free of all trouble, all unhappiness. So that is the meaning of nirvana. The thing is, we are so much involved in this thing called life that we have forgotten about this because of our emotions. It is our emotions that are misleading this whole thing, that we become blinded by the emotions. And because we are blinded by the emotions, we have to gradually wake up. It's a dream. Existence is a dream. We have to wake up from this dream. So a Buddha is a person who has awoken from this. So to awake from this dream of existence is nirvana, and that is what the Buddha attained. So the Buddha is not just an ordinary human being, but a person who has, and then he shows us the way to get out of this. That's the important thing to understand. Yeah. Any other questions? You have a question?
Yes, you do, but
that's
what he asked.
I'm not sure how to formulate. I'm wondering about the whole karma.
Uh-huh.
Someone's born in a bad place,
mm-hmm.
because of their karma.
Mm-hmm.
So someone that is at a better place, if they're looking at these people, a person that is in a bad place,
mm-hmm.
can that create views of discrimination of people? I'm not sure how to say it. Thinking, okay, well, that person, that's his karma or her karma. So that's their problem, and I'm at a better place. Can that create?
No, there are people who think like that.
Yeah.
And when they begin to think, they are creating bad karma themselves.
Okay.
This is what is happening, you see.
Because they're judging.
Yeah. So we should not think like that, because we can also enter that state by our bad karma. So if we begin to think like that, we have to see that karma makes everyone equal, really. People don't become superior by karma. They become equal because everyone is subject to the same law. And if we do bad things, we'll become bad like them. And if they, even the bad people, if they are suffering, but still if they do good things, they can rise above us. Everything depends on the karma. So that we can't feel superior about karma. Because even if we feel superior, that becomes bad karma.
What goes
that,
against
that?
You were talking about coming from the bad world and the good world.
Yeah. What are the bad words?
Bad world.
Yeah, that means, you see, there are all kinds of worlds that the Buddha spoke of. If we go to talk about this, it also becomes one whole talk. Maybe we can postpone this talk. I will talk about the world, maybe next time. Because that's a long story. If I go to describe all the world, but there are a lot of bad worlds and good worlds. That's important to understand. If you are familiar with some of the Buddhist, you are a Buddhist or what?
Preta Sura Asura.
Preta
Sura Asura.
Yeah.
I never heard
about that. You see, the thing is, if you have studied Buddhism, you know that there are the things called Satra Apaya. Have you heard of those things?
I have heard of them. I don't know where they are.
She's trying to stay away from them.
Well, I will explain
all that.
That's why I
asked the question. I know about this world, but I don't know the other words you are talking about.
Yes, this is why it is really not important to keep on believing if you don't want to believe. But the important thing is, the understanding of good and bad.
Well, it's not about believing. I asked one. You said you're coming from the bad world. Yet some people are from the bad world.
Yeah, bad world means the apayas. Those are the bad words. If you don't believe in apayas, then of course, then you don't have to worry about it.
Then you can't come from the bad world.
Yeah, that will have no meaning for you. But for those who believe in it, it can have meaning. The important thing is, as I have mentioned some time back also, that it is not necessary for a Buddhist to believe in rebirth or samsara or anything. Because the practice is based on what you can observe here and now. But at the same time, the Buddha spoke about these other worlds, but you can come to know about the other worlds only when you have been able to purify your mind and come to a stage where you can recall your past lives. When you are able to recall your past lives, and when you are also able to see other beings in other worlds, this is a higher level of the mind, where I told you about Superman level. When you have reached that level, then you will be able to know about these things. It's like today people have faith in the scientists. When a scientist speaks about the atoms and the molecules, they believe. But have you seen the atoms or the molecules? You have not seen. But you believe because you have faith in the science. So in a similar way, if you have faith in the Buddha or anyone who has developed the mind to that level and seen certain things, then you'll believe. So everything depends on that faith. So the important thing is to not to think that you know everything in the world, and if there is something that you have never seen, that means it doesn't exist. If you come to that conclusion, that is not the correct thing. Say, for example, I have never been to Germany and I have never seen Germany. Other people talk about going to Germany. I can say, no, I have never seen, therefore Germany doesn't exist. You see, it's like that, you see. So, it's simply a matter of belief at that point. But if you take into consideration what the Buddha said, and if you believe that the Buddha is more advanced than you, and if you, if the Buddha says that there are certain things, then it may be so. That's how it is.
But didn't the Buddha also say that if I said something, and if you don't, if you think about it, and if you don't understand it, then you don't have to believe it.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So you don't have to believe. These are not dogmas.
Yes. That's
so you don't have to go after dogmas, and you don't have to believe all those things to become a Buddhist. The important thing is to understand why you practice the five precepts, or why you should become you should be able to even make sacrifices for others. Not so much to because you want to be born in heaven or going to hell, but because it is good. You should be able to appreciate being good. So goodness itself, goodness has a value, even if there is no heaven or hell. And therefore, when you understand the value of goodness, then you can become good and purify the mind. And if you find that purity of mind brings happiness, then that is enough to purify the mind. You bring happiness not only for yourself, you also bring happiness to others. So that itself is enough for you to understand the value of being good.
But can I do? Can I do good, something good, with the explicit desire to be born in a good place?
Yeah.
But no, if my desire is to be born in a good place,
yeah.
So I want to do good things.
Yeah. If you
isn't that itself a selfish motive?
Yeah, that itself becomes a selfish motive. Yeah. And by thinking in that way, your goodness comes down. You see, the value of your goodness comes down because it's self-centered. There is a small problem with this.
It's cold.
There's too much salt in it.
Eating the old food is a sign of living in a hell.
What's that? Eating old food.
Yeah, it's a sign of
that's a good one.
But these bad worlds and these good worlds can exist all together, correct? These bad worlds and these good worlds can exist together, right? For instance, this example with South Africa or whatever is considered necessarily a bad place to live.
Yeah.
People are suffering more than others.
Yeah.
That could be considered one of those bad worlds.
Yeah, yeah.
In our world also. Yeah. Likewise, there are places where people are living very luxuriously, very happy.
Yeah.
That could be considered one of the things.
Oh, yeah.
Living
yeah.
all together in the same world.
Yeah.
That's what I
mean.
Right?
Yeah.
But there are also different planes of existence that are outside of this world that are bad and good.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And also, the other thing is to be born as an animal. The animal world is also a bad world, you see.
That's
where you will not be happy.
In this world, all these
in this world itself, you get the bad words.
Huh?
In this world itself, you get the bad words. In this world itself.
No, in this world also, you get bad things. But still, there are worlds outside this world where you have bad words and good words.
I will believe that when I attain that stage.
What's that?
I will believe that when I attain that stage.
That's right, yeah.
When I go to Germany.
Yeah. Yeah.
But according to Buddha, human beings exist only in this world.
No, no, no. There can be other human worlds.
Did he speak of
it? Yes. The only thing is, mainly he was speaking about this world because this is the only world that we can see. The Buddha always spoke about what other people can see. He didn't want to speak very much about things that people can't see.
So he didn't speak of it?
Huh?
So therefore he didn't refer to anything like that?
No, no, he didn't go into talking like that, yeah.
Good words. But I suppose the bad words are on this one itself.
No, you are simply trying to say that only what you know is that is all, what you don't know there is nothing.
So, when the statement like you make your own world, like Buddha said, right?
That you make your own world, that's also true. Yeah.
That is how we go into make it to this context. People think that the different world or different things are bad, different other worlds are good.
It's your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, if you take that concept of you make your own world, then I can say within here, there is hell and heaven.
Well, yes, that is true. But still, you yourself can be going to other worlds after death, and there it will be your made-up world also again there, but still it will be a different world.
Is that, is it all in your mind as to what, how you perceive things?
Yeah, most of it is in the mind, but at the same time the mind after death is a different mind. So, after death you can be in another world, but still it is in your mind that you see the world. That's how it goes.
But even before Buddha,
yeah,
hadn't the people believed that they were rebirth and they were different worlds?
Yeah.
If I remember rightly, yeah.
Yeah.
So that this belief of the different worlds,
it's not only
before
a belief.
Yeah.
It's not only a belief, because there were people who had psychic powers even before the Buddha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they had seen certain things. And that's why they spoke about other worlds. They knew about the other worlds even before the Buddha. Not merely a belief. So, because that was a time when meditation was very advanced. Today the meditation is not very advanced. Today the advancement is in the scientific technology and things like that. Now today we find people doing all kinds of magical things through the scientific technology. Now for example, when our friend Mr. Banda takes me in the car, he only has to press a button and the garage door opens automatically. So it's wonderful, but sometimes those days people never thought that that thing like that could be done. Even press a button here and the television starts and you find people inside the television talking and all that. But we know that there are no people inside that box, but still it looks like they are actually there. So those are magical things. But those are possible because the scientists were able to understand how things were happening in the world and they could make machines to do various things. But in a similar way, those days there were people who through their meditation they could gain certain powers and through the mind they could do many things. Now there is a story in the sutras where the Buddha's disciples, Sariputta and Moggallana, these were the two chief disciples of the Buddha. And the Buddha had gone far away to some other place and these two were in one place. And Moggallana, the chief in psychic powers, he comes to visit Sariputta, the other chief disciple. They were living close in one community, I mean, one monastery or something like that, but different places. And so he comes and Sariputta says, oh, today your face looks very pure and pleasant. Did you have a conversation with the Buddha? Then he said, yes, I had a conversation with the Buddha. Then he says, how did you have the conversation with the Buddha? Buddha is living far away. Did the Buddha come to you by psychic power and talk to you? Or did you go to the Buddha through psychic power and talk to him? No, no, the Buddha didn't come to me and I didn't go to the Buddha. Then how did you speak? Well, I saw the Buddha and the Buddha saw me and we spoke and communicated. So you see, it's like something like
satellite conversation.
Satellite conversation or whatever you call it.
Maybe satellite phone.
Yeah, like the phones, yeah. You get the picture while you are talking. It's a similar thing. But this is all done through psychic powers. So, so things like that happened those days. But today, people don't know how to make it. So maybe in a future time, something might happen here and through atomic warfare or something like that, and all the scientists will be destroyed and all the machines and the radios and the TVs will be destroyed, and the time comes when there is nothing and only primitive people living here again, and we will think, oh, we have heard that those days people could make machines to fly in the air and even go to the moon and all kinds of things, and maybe some stories, some myths or something like that. They might think like that, you see, because they don't see these things. So it is a thing like that. At that time, the people were very advanced in the meditation area. But today, people are advanced in other ways through scientific technology and things like that. That's the difference. Okay. Anything else? No more questions, huh? You have questions?
Maybe.
You said you had some questions, you never asked those questions.
Oh, I asked. Huh? Maybe another day.
Ah, you want? You are hungry?
No. Looks like you are hungry.
Yeah.
What is the natural tendency of people to be selfish, not the other way around?
Ah, very good. Well, that is a question that I will take a long time to answer, but still, I'll try to make it very short. All beings, human beings, even animals, you see, we are born with five senses. The eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the whole body becomes a sense organ, the sense of touch. And with these senses, we are able to experience three kinds of sensations. Pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And there is this tendency, it is simply, we are organisms, we have to understand that we are simply organisms living in an environment. And the environment stimulates the senses, like light falling on the eye, stimulates the eye, sounds coming to the ears, smells coming to the nose, taste coming to the tongue, and touches coming to the body, you see. So like that, there is the stimulation of the senses. And when the senses are stimulated, there is a reaction of the organism to the stimulus, and the reaction comes in the form of a desire for the pleasant thing, a hatred of the unpleasant thing. So it's a natural thing that happens. And because it is natural, what happens is the desire for pleasure and the hatred of pain means you are seeking permanency of pleasure. Because what you want is pleasure, you want to avoid pain. So that means what you really want is only pleasure and no pain. But that is impossible. So this whole natural impulse is going against reality, the reality of impermanence. And the result is unhappiness. So this is the problem. So it's a natural tendency for people to become attracted to pleasure and to hate pain. So the whole life becomes an effort to avoid pain and to get more and more pleasure. And to gain control over this comes only later, because the human brain has developed to a point where the mind can think and reason out. Now the animals are not so advanced in this. The human beings are more advanced. And as people are able to think and reason out, people can become aware of a thing called impermanence. Otherwise, people are, they don't know about impermanence. So the impermanence is a concept that we form, and then a problem arises that our thinking process and the emotions are going in two opposite directions. Emotions want pleasure. Thinking says, no, you can't have pleasure here. So there is a conflict coming up. This is what Sigmund Freud saw. And he found that that was the root of all mental sicknesses. Neurosis, psychosis, things like that. And he was trying to find an answer. But it was the Buddha who really found an answer to this. And he pointed out that ultimately the emotions can be controlled. It is by only controlling the emotions that we can really become happy. And that came after the intelligence started developing, you see. So this is why it is easier to become, do the bad things, because being carried away by emotions is easier than to control the emotions. This is the problem.
It can also be simply a biological phenomena, because all animals, they try to survive.
Yeah.
The survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
So the selfishness is probably a biological phenomenon.
Yeah.
But then we can, as humans, because we have intelligent brain, we can analyze the cause of that selfishness.
Yeah.
And understand it as the desire to focus and pay. But the purely basic thing may be a purely biological explanation, selfishness, survival for the fittest. That is, I want to survive at the expense of you.
That is the problem. Yeah. But that biological tendency, trying to survive, is unrealistic. That's the problem. Because no one really survives. Everyone has to die. That's the problem. Charles Darwin, he thought that he was talking about the struggle for existence and the survival of the fittest. But in actual fact, no one survives. There is only the struggle for existence going on. And that is what keeps the evolutionary process also going on. So it is the Buddha who ultimately begins to understand this problem and see that the whole biological process was making a mistake. It was trying to become permanent in an impermanent world. And it was only an effort to become permanent, but no one is becoming permanent. And there is only a struggle for existence, but there is no real existence. This is the point. And so, this is how the Buddha ultimately found that it is possible to stop the struggle. And so, becoming a Buddha is really stopping the struggle for existence. And this is why that is the end of the evolutionary process. The evolutionary process stops that. So that is why the Buddha is the ultimate point in the process of evolution. Yes?
We will stop here.
We will stop here then.